This week's interview on the Metal Command Show is with Nick Van Dyke of the band Redemption. Nick, it's great to have you on the show and talk about what Redemption has going on right now. What do you guys have going on musically, and what is the band currently up to right now?
Well, let's see. There are some things I'm not at liberty to speak about. It's going to be, I think, a pretty exciting year for us. We are writing at the moment, and I frankly wish I could. There are a couple of big things that I can't talk about just yet, but it's going to be a year for us.
This album, The Art of Loss, in my opinion, is probably my favorite Redemption album, and it's also my favorite album of 2016. Believe it or not, I went back and listened to everything, and you know, I will be compiling a list here. A lot of the listeners are going to find this out here shortly, but you were the basically, The Art of Loss is my favorite album of 2016, and there was so much about this record that really stuck out to me. And talk about your latest album. Talk a little bit about it. Let people know about it. And, you know, it was a great record, in my opinion.
All right, so that's a lot of different threads to pick up on that. Let's see, from a songwriting standpoint, not that much change. You know, I've never been somebody that feels like we need to completely reinvent ourselves. We have a signature sound, which I think is itself somewhat unique. There aren't a lot of bands that combine the sort of, you know, intensity and heaviness and riff orientation we have with strong melodies. You know, I can probably count on the fingers of one hand the bands that are that have the heaviness and are still very melodic. So that sort of puts us in a unique place. And then we have, I think, a cinematic quality with, you know, that we have always described it as what I would call emotional urgency to the music, which is kind of hard to put your finger on. I could explain it in terms of music theory and resolving chords and things like that, but it's that's our sound, and I think we struck up upon it a few records ago, and we've been since then sort of building on that and hopefully getting better in terms of the actual songwriting. And you know, the longer the band stays together, the tighter we are. So it wasn't a reinvention, but we did want to do a couple of things differently from a production standpoint. We went back to Tommy Hansen, with whom we worked on Snowfall on Judgment Day, and I got that sort of warm but crunchy sort of European-type sound to the record again, which is something we were looking for. I think, you know, the other thing that sets it apart before we get to the guests is I think Ray sounds better on this than on anything he's ever done with Redemption. I think the amount of touring that he did in support of Fate's Warning and the work that he put into recording the Fate's Warning album along, you know, a little bit before this really got his voice in phenomenal shape. And so sounds, I think, much more powerful on this than he did on our previous record, which is a great thing. And then in terms of guest performers, you know, we have a very sad situation with our dear friend and bandmate Bernie, who, you know, had a terrible medical malady and this brain aneurysm that happened to him maybe, you know, not quite 2 years ago. And, you know, he is one of the founding members of the band, as far as I'm concerned, and a partner in what we do, and we've kept his spot for him, but it became apparent to us that, you know, he needs to focus on getting better and getting his life back before he worries about playing guitar. And we knew that he would want us to continue while we wait for him to get better. So we brought in some pretty phenomenal guest guitar players. You know, it probably seems like it was a master plan to get all these Megadeth guitar players. It wasn't. It just sort of evolved naturally. And we can talk about that if you like. I had always, you know, Marty Friedman's always been one of my favorites, and I thought, well, you know what, might as well shoot for the stars. And we got a hold of Marty, and I sent him the music, and he was, you know, very into it. And you know, he's in high demand, so it's not feasible for a small band to pay him to play an entire record. But he was able to contribute to a couple of songs, and around the time that he was doing that, I learned that Chris Poland did session work, and I see Chris play with his band Ohm here a couple of times a year, and have done so for some time. And we got connected through his manager, and turned out he was aware of Redemption and was a bit of a fan of ours, so that was great. And he's the nicest, humblest, and I think, you know, unbelievably original player. So he contributed a ton, and then we've been friends with Chris Broderick for some time, and he was busy working on his new band and then, you know, we had recorded this, but then he came back around, and he, being friendly with Bernie and with the rest of us, said he really wanted to contribute. So we wound up having all three guitar players, which was a pretty neat trick. And then also we have Simone Mulleroni from DGM, who plays just mind-boggling stuff on this record. The solo that he does on the song Slouching Towards Bethlehem is the craziest, most impressive guitar solo I've ever heard in my life. I remember playing it for Ray, who hates guitar solos, and he literally just started laughing because it's so impressive and amazing sounding. And the last guest is, of course, John Bush, singer from Armored Saint, and we have a habit of recording songs, you know, whether they be classic rock or even new wave, you know, the Police and stuff like that, songs that you wouldn't normally expect a heavy metal band to cover. You know, my favorite song in the world is probably Hallowed Be Thy Name by Iron Maiden. We don't need to do a cover of that. It's already been done to perfection, and there are probably already too many covers of it out there. But I had in my head for a while to do a cover of Love Rain Over Me by The Who, and the challenge there is that what makes that song special is the vocal performance. And, you know, it might be the single best vocal performance in the history of classic rock. And it's hard to do that song if you're not really invested in the emotion of that vocal. And Ray's, you know, voice is amazing, but it's stylistically just a little bit different than Roger Daltrey. And I thought, well, if we're going to do this, who better to do it than John, who's got that sort of great gravelly go for broke. And I remember telling him as we were recording it, if your voice isn't cracking, you're not singing hard enough. So we really wanted to capture that, just singing right on the edge and conveying the emotion of that lyric, and John did an amazing job. So we're really kind of, you know, unbelievably lucky to have the assortment of guest performers that we do on that record, and I couldn't be more pleased with their contributions.
When I think of the covers that you've played, Nick, I go back to This Mortal Coil, where you had that disc full of cover tracks, and the two songs that really stuck out at me were the Tori Amos cover and the Elton John cover that you did. And I always thought that you guys put a very, very good spin on a lot of these tracks. I think that you guys have really done a very unique thing on these things. And, you know, it's funny, I was listening, you know, I don't really get a lot of press releases, but I was listening to the album Art of Loss, and all of a sudden I heard this song come out, which sounded, you know, kind of familiar. It did sound like a Who song, but I couldn't figure out what song it was. I couldn't remember the name of the song. Then when I started listening to the vocals, I realized, I'm like, it's John Bush. And I was really surprised to hear him on the record. Then obviously I went back, read the press release, and go, oh yeah, John Bush is singing a track on this. But really, you guys do an absolutely amazing job on a lot of the cover tracks you do, and making them sound great, and making them sound a little bit unique, and adding your own twist on it.
That's our hope. You know, it was a lot of fun doing that covers disc, but if we go back all the way to the first record we did, we covered a Police song that didn't get released, and then we covered on Fullness, we covered a Faith No More track, which I think turned out pretty darn well. Mm-hmm. And then on Origins, we did Love to Love by UFO, and we had also recorded that Precious Things, the Tori Amos song, which didn't get released in the U.S., but got released overseas. I'm trying to remember. I don't think we did a cover for Snowfall, because I was busy trying to not die.
Right.
Sitting in Arkansas dealing with cancer treatment, and then we made up for it on the next record by doing that second disc. And, you know, it's fun to do those things. So it's a tremendous amount of fun to do those things. So we try and stretch out a little bit.
Yeah, and you did mention something quickly about dealing with cancer, because I remember when This Mortal Coil came out, and I remember this album, you know, there were a lot of lyrics that had a lot to do with that. And, you know, you had multiple myeloma, and you were able to get through it. You ended up getting through the disease, which that is something that, you know, unfortunately, it just doesn't happen very often for people. And Nick, if you had to talk to somebody that was going through the same thing that you were going through, or even someone that has cancer, you know, if someone were to ask you, you know, what advice could you give somebody that is going through that? I mean, what advice would you give to somebody if they came and asked you for that, if they were going through the same thing that you are going through?
Well, you know, it's very situational, because that particular disease normally afflicts people that are much older, and if you've, you know, if, you, if you're 75 years old and you're going to die in the next 10 years anyway, you view those things differently than if you're 40 and need to be cured of something so that you are able to watch your children grow up and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. I guess what I would tell people in general is that the brain is another organ in the body, and it affects your attitude and the energy and outlook that you bring to a situation affects your immune system and affects your energy level and the rest of how you respond to treatment and everything like that. So I would tell people to fight, and be positive as best you can, and become your own advocate. And this applies, to situations beyond healthcare. We follow each other on social media enough to know where we both sort of stand on this stuff. There's a certain amount of taking inventory and looking in the mirror and determining what you're able to control and what you're not, mm-hmm. and taking charge of what you're able to control and taking ownership of your decisions and your actions and your responsibilities, and investing yourself in getting better, whether that means, overcoming an addiction, whether that means committing to success at work or in a relationship or in parenting, or whether that means fighting a diagnosis, right? There are a lot of things that are out of our hands, but that doesn't absolve us from, having an influence in it if we apply ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's funny, there were a lot of people that I met in diagnosis that some people are like, I'm just, it's in God's hands or it's in the doctor's hands or whatever. They don't want to know what's going on. They don't want to know why they're taking a certain medicine. They don't want to know how it's interacting with the disease and what they hope to do. They just sort of check out. And that's just not who I am. I want to know what's going on. I want to at least fool myself into thinking I'm an active decision maker and that I have some input over my fate. You can't always fight everything, but you can certainly at least, steel yourself for it and don't give up.
Right. Well, and I think that was a very good example that you just gave, and something that's very inspiring to me as a person, and I'm sure that has inspired some other people, is, when I was listening to, this Mortal Coil, I hear songs like No Tickets to the Funeral and Let It Rain, and, to me it's very inspiring. You basically dealt with a situation that most people would have lost hope and most people would have just given up, and you didn't give up, and you ended up getting through it, and to me, that says a lot about you, and it also says a lot about the fact that, hey, hope isn't completely gone. You could still get through these situations. And the best thing about it is you basically teach people a lesson saying, hey, never give up. And to be honest with you, it's a very inspiring thing to me.
Well, that's kind of you to say, and I hope that we do contribute in our own way to some sort of positivity. And I do hear from people that say our music has helped them get through challenges, and it's incredibly satisfying and makes me feel wonderful to do that. So we're not music for everybody, but we do resonate with some people, and it's a pretty special connection.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your record label. You're on Metal Blade Records, and at least from my perspective, from the promotional aspect, because I'm in radio, they did a very good job with this band, and, as far as promoting the Last Redemption album, and talk a little bit about the label change that you guys made and the choice to go to Metal Blade Records.
Sure. So I've, known the Metal Blade folks socially for, 15 or 20 years even. It's kind of scary, actually. And, I don't like to be the guy that calls in favors, so I had never asked them if they wanted to sign us. And, we'd had a very good experience first with Sensory and then with Inside Out, and Inside Out eventually got bought by Century. And we had a very, very productive relationship with them over the course of several records, but our contract was up, and it came time to renegotiate that, and I was starting to talk with them, and then Tracy Vera from Metal Blade, who's a dear friend, approached me and said, would you ever consider being on Metal Blade? And I said, sure. I mean, they are one of the most important and storied labels in the history of independent music, let alone heavy metal. And, the only question I had is we're not, they've gone a little bit to where the market is, and they've got a lot of younger, more deathy metal bands on there rather than, prog being played by a bunch of 40-year-olds. 40-somethings, I should say. Closer to 50 than 40 these days. But, at the end of the day, it's the same record stores. It's the same but nobody is as good as independent distribution as those folks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't have anything bad to say about Inside Out. It's just Metal Blade was, you know, seemed like an opportunity for us to get exposed to an even bigger audience, and they were definitely behind us and supportive from day one, and, you know, they remain so. They're absolutely fabulous to work with.
Big trend in the music business now, it seems to be every album is getting put out on vinyl. All the new albums that are coming out, there's always, for most of them, a vinyl version of the record. And, you know, obviously people wouldn't be doing it if they weren't making any money at it. And I know the last Redemption album was put out on vinyl. And, you know, have you seen any type of, you know, sales increase or any type of, you know, extra interest in physical sales because of this?
It did get released on vinyl, and then Century Media, for on behalf of Inside Out, did a reissue on vinyl of the three records that we did with them. So it's really cool, you know, as somebody who grew up, you know, with a record player and collecting vinyl, it's neat to see us in that format. I'm not sure, you know, how, when it crosses over from sort of hipster thing into an actual, you know, meaningful event in the format wars. It's neat to see it. And I think it harkens back to a time when music was a little bit more special. Now, I remember buying a record, and you'd sit down with it, and you'd open it up. And first of all, the artwork is in this big format instead of this tiny little, you know, you go from something that's 14 inches square to something that's 4 inches square to something that's a thumbnail if you downloaded something. Mm-hmm. So you've got that richer experience. Sometimes you had a gatefold, and you'd open it up, and there'd be all these pages inside. And, you know, you'd immerse yourself in the lyrics, and you'd learn every aspect of every song. Now, even albums that I like, if I'll buy something on iTunes, I don't have a lyric sheet, really. You're never forced to contend with one that's like a sleeve of an album. So you got to look for the artwork if you're really looking for it. You got to look for the lyrics if you're really looking for it. You kind of got to look for even song names. Like, I bought the most recent Shrink Wrap is probably that Neil Morse record, Verisimilitude of a Dream, or Similitude of a Dream, and I've listened to it. It's amazing music. I couldn't tell you the name of a single song, and I couldn't tell you any lyrics in it. Mm-hmm. And it's just a different way to digest music, and I, to be honest with you, not to sound like an old fuddy-duddy, but I kind of miss the old way. So it's neat to see stuff on vinyl. I don't know how big it's going to be. Maybe it will be. I mean, we're a small band in a fairly small genre, so it's hard to sort of look at us as any indicator of what it means for the industry. But, you know, mm-hmm. It's certainly nice to see. And the labels aren't dumb. They wouldn't do it if it wasn't selling.
Right.
So I'm not sure how much it's selling, but it's got to be doing something.
Well, something I want to touch on. What was the reception like for this album? You know, you have a new label, and, you know, you have a new record out. And what was the reception like for this record?
Well, I mean, you know, we were part of what I mentioned that we wanted to do with Metal Blade is get exposed to a slightly bigger audience. And, you know, I think most fans of Fate's Warning, most fans of you know, hardcore prog metal fans are probably aware of us. Judging from some of the reviews that we got and some of the comments on YouTube, we were exposed to a new audience, some of whom don't know what to make of us. So that's good, though. And I think the album did well. Metal Blade's happy with it. We're happy with it. I'll be honest and say I wish we could have toured on it. Ray has been very busy with Fate's Warning and has been, frankly, a little bit more constrained in what he's able to do to, you know, come out on the road with us. So that was, you know, kind of a bummer, but, you know, we carry on. It's not the only gut punch we've had to endure as a band over the years.
Well, you know, that's interesting because, you know, when I went and actually listened to Theories of Flight, and I went and listened, you know, by Fate's Warning, and I go and listen to this album, you know, it's easy for people to go and say, and I've seen it in a few reviews, to say, hey, you know what, it's just a Fate's Warning clone band, but, you know, Redemption's really nothing like that. Redemption is a lot more twists and turns. I think the songwriting's a lot different in so many ways, and, you know, obviously the singer's the same, but, you know, that's kind of where it stops for me. And, you know, the one song that really stuck out for me, and it's actually my favorite song on the record, is a song called Hope Dies Last. And, you know, by far my favorite song on the album. And, you know, I wanted to bring this up to you. What does that song mean to you? And talk a little bit about that track.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you. It's one of my favorites on the record, too. And I think it's sort of the lost. It's maybe one of the unsung songs in terms of, you know, it doesn't necessarily pop out to everybody, but I think it's sort of the hidden gem of the record, if you will. Mm-hmm. There's always one song that gets written before any of the other ones, and I think some, at least lyrically, the ideas behind that song were sort of in my head probably when I was working on Mortal Coil. And in fact, I remember even playing around with the phrase guys last years and years and years before that. So the idea had been percolating, and, you know, I'm not sure when I wrote the actual riffs, but it started coming together, and that was one of the first songs, possibly the first song that I wrote for the record. And, you know, it's a long-form song that allows us to sort of stretch out, and, you know, I've never wanted to write, since this is one of the things that we did on our first record, which was really kind of a demo that I never wanted to go back to, was writing a long song just for the sake of writing a long song. So it's, you know, it's 10 minutes long, but it doesn't feel to me like a really, really long song. That's how long it takes to express those musical ideas. You know, there's a bit of an intro, and then you've got a kind of a verse-chorus, bridge piece to it with some solos thrown in there, but it just sort of, that's how long it takes to deliver the musical ideas. Lyrically, you know, the notion, I guess it's biblical, although the song is, you know, we're not a religious band per se, but, you know, the notion of faith, hope, love that, you know, has been talked about by King's X and many, many others since it was written down by St. Paul a long time ago. But if you think about it, even in a secular sense, faith could be faith in your fellow man, faith in yourself, faith in anything, right? So those are the three, I guess you'd call them emotional or psychological aspects that set being human apart from being an animal, right? You have an awareness of hope, and you have awareness of faith, and you have awareness of love as a concept. And animals have love too, particularly primates and that sort of thing, but not in the same way that we do. And, you know, if you strip away everything else, there's always hope. So the notion that even if you've gone through the pain of losing, and that's really the underlying theme of the record, there's always still hope. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of what we wanted to explore with that, and it's a good segue into the overall meaning. You know, we don't think of it as a concept album, but there is a loose thread of through many of the songs that a lot of decisions that we make in life boil down to, are you operating out of fear or out of love? Whether if you're in a dead-end job and you want to pursue your passions instead of just trying to earn a wage, but you're afraid that you might not be able to make as much money, or worse, you're afraid that you might fail. Mm-hmm. If you have a entrepreneurial idea and you want to set up your own business, are you going to pursue your passion, or are you going to do something that's safer? If you're in a relationship that's maybe not healthy, are you afraid to break out and strike out on your own? Or conversely, if you're in a relationship that takes a hell of a lot of work, are you afraid to commit? Are you afraid to do what it takes to make it work? Or are you doing the right thing out of love? So
right.
Many, many, many decisions in life sort of boil down to fear versus love, and you always got to choose love. Otherwise, you're not, you know, if you operate out of a fear of being hurt, you're never really going to live.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about the other song, some of the other songs I really liked on the album. I know you did a video for the title track, and, you know, also you did the song Slouching Towards Bethlehem, which is another song that I really like quite a bit. And, you know, I was going to ask about the guitar solo, but you ended up kind of bringing it up, and we just kind of sort of went there.
Guitar solo is just, I got to mention it again. It's just, it's insanely, it's just crazy how good it is.
Yeah.
And I remember Simone sent me the files. He's like, don't ever ask me to play this again, because I don't think I can. So, you know, the title track, you know, it's sort of a corollary to what I just mentioned between fear and love. Part of life is losing. You know, we will eventually lose our friends. We will, you know, our careers come to a close. Eventually we lose our lives. You've raised children. You lose them to their own lives. They leave the house and they start on their own. So you can't do anything in life. Nothing in life is permanent. And learning to gracefully accept the end of something when it's time to accept it, there's an art to that, hence the song. So that's really about, it's a little bit of that and a little bit about taking responsibility for your own joy in life. Slouching Towards Bethlehem, not a religious song, although it's been referred to as such, but that's based on a poem by William Butler Yeats that was written after the end of World War I, when he sort of looked around at, I guess, the results of trench warfare and a lot of other horrible things that happened back then, and thought the world was in a pretty sad state. And yet here we are, you know, 100 years later, it's still got some major challenges.
Right.
We talked about Hope Dies Last. I'm missing a song, the third track. Well, we'll just go out of order because it's
Damaged.
I don't have it. Damaged. Yeah. That was one of the first songs we wrote, which, you know, it's hard to speak in terms of singles, but that's a fairly accessible track, and that's about, you know, we inherit the psychological profile of the people with whom we interact, and we're not responsible for the baggage that they bring into a situation. And sometimes people are too far gone, and you know, you can't, not everybody wants to be saved. So that's that song. We talked about Hope Dies Last. Golden Light, again, you know, I read on Amazon, somebody thinks it's a religious song. It's not. It's about the power of falling in love and being in love, and how you sort of feel invincible when that happens. Kind of a sappy song, but I think it's a beautiful song, so it works for me. Center of the Fire is based on a poem that I came across online, a beautiful poem by a woman named Araya Mountain Dreamer. And it's really about, you know, what's important in life, and when, you know, you're talking about a bond with another person, what matters is not what kind of money they make or how smart they are or, you know, why they do the things they do. What matters is when the going gets tough, are you going to stand in the fire with me, or are you going to bolt?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a beautiful, beautiful poem, and I pretty much stole it to use as inspiration for the song. And then, of course, the Who track, and then that brings us, 30 Silver, with some shredding guitar on it. That, I guess, I had a song like this on Fullness of Time about every 10 years or so, I guess I can count on being screwed over in business by somebody I trusted.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, about being betrayed by somebody that I had considered a mentor in business, which was kind of a drag, but it made for very good, angry material for a heavy metal song.
It's usually how it works.
Yeah. You know, it is cathartic to write and perform this stuff. And then the last piece at Day's End was, you know, I did want to not write something for the sake of making it long, but I did want to experiment with song structure in a way that was a little bit more expansive. And there were a lot of ideas that we had been accumulating that didn't, you know, form the basis of an entire song, but were strong ideas in and of themselves. And I was able to take a bunch of those and knit them together in a way that I think is pretty effective. And you talk about twists and turns, that song goes all over the place. From, you know, there's a part that jumps from sounding like almost like an early Genesis to something that sounds like Slayer, like back to back. So a little bit of something for everybody there, and of course it ends with a sort of big finish with the cinematic qualities that I mentioned that we strive to have. So pretty fun song there.
Now, you worked with John Butch. John is, you know, he was on my favorite album from high school, which is obviously Sound of White Noise by Anthrax, but also I love Armored Saint. And, you know, what was it like to work with him?
So I've known John a little bit socially for, you know, 15 years probably. Great guy, very, very nice guy, super humble. And, you know, I grew up listening to Saint. I'm pretty close friends with Joey Vera at this point. I didn't see them live until pretty late in the game for whatever reason, because I just, you know, never got around to seeing them back in the 80s. And the first time I saw them, I mean, John, if you haven't seen them live, John is one of the most commanding frontmen. He's just awesome. And their live performance, the energy and the way that he interacts with the crowd and the way he sort of throws himself into it, it's like super impressive. He's really, really, really underrated. He has a voice that's got this really sort of bluesy, gravelly growl to it, and it works, you know, for certain things better than other things. It really, really, really works for that Who song. So like I said, I'd had him in mind for that, and I'd asked him maybe a year before we even sat down and started working on the record if he might be into it, and he said that he would be. And then I gave him the, you know, the music that had been recorded and you know, gave it to him through Joey, and he said he was definitely up for it. So we went over and recorded. He's a total pro. It took a couple hours. He was you know, super into it. And he's like, really, you know, you got to give me, you know, Roger Daltrey had trouble hitting these notes when he was 23 years old, and you got to give them to me now, huh? And he didn't even have the courtesy to drop the key. So, but I knew he could do it, and I knew, like I said, that song only works if you push it really to the limit. Similar, really, to that Tori Amos cover that we did. If you're not, you know, conveying the emotion of that song by like gasping for air and choking the way she did in, you know, in her live performances of it, you're not delivering the emotional wallop that it really needs. So the same thing was at play here, and I literally told him, if your voice isn't cracking on those high notes the way Roger's was in the original, we're not trying hard enough to push it. Mm-hmm. And he was, you know, it takes a absolute commitment and a tremendous amount of confidence to be able to pull that off, and John brought it, and I think it's awesome.
Well, one of the things that we really didn't mention much yet in this interview is you did a really interesting cover of Say Something, and I thought that was interesting, and talk a bit about recording that cover.
Yeah, so to be honest with you, it's something my daughter was playing on the piano, and you know, I don't listen to a ton of pop music. I'm aware of, you know, I know Bruno Mars and Lady Gaga and people that rise to that sort of level of notoriety, but I don't have my finger on the pulse of top 40 music. But my daughter was singing this song, and I'm like, God, this is the most just brutally depressing song I've ever heard in my life. I mean, it's just unrelentingly sad. And it's funny, she's such a little sweetheart, and she has such a positive, cheerful disposition. She's like, it's not sad, Daddy. It's a, you know, it's a happy song. It's a love song, blah, blah, blah. No, it's like brutal, rip your heart out and jump on it when you're done running over with a truck song. But, you know, she knew how to play it on piano, and she has a beautiful little voice for her little 15-year-old self. And I thought, what a cool thing to do a cover of this and, you know, have her do the part that Christina Aguilera sings in the original. And it's a beautiful song, as sad as it is. And, you know, Ray has the voice to do the primary vocal, frankly, a stronger voice than the guy who originally recorded it. And then, you know, throw my little daughter on there. It's instant magic.
Nick, any last words to say to any of the metal fans out there that are going to be checking this out, and maybe some of them that haven't really heard you before?
You know, I tend to give the same answer to this, and it's not because I'm trying to be unimaginative, but because I'm really sincere about it. I just want to thank everybody for their interest and support. We're not a band that's ever going to make a ton of money. We do this because, you know, we enjoy the connectivity that we have with our audience. And when people are touched by what we do, or, you know, are just moved or come see us play, and they, you know, bring energy to our interaction, that's the reward. So we're really, really thankful for our fans. You know, really, really thankful to you, Tony, and appreciate you, you know, giving us a bit of a platform, and super glad that you like the record.